Welcome to the Implicit Bias podcast series presented by the University of Minnesota Medical School Department of Orthopedic Surgery, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee in partnership with the Medical School Office of DEI.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our podcast. I'm Aaron Corfield. I am one of the faculty members in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery here at the University of Minnesota. And we want to give a shout out to our listeners in this multi-episode series. And throughout this series, we're going to really focus on implicit bias. It's a five-part series. And during this, we'll be talking with staff from the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion here at the University of Minnesota Medical School. We're going to talk to them about implicit bias and how our biases impact our search and selection committees. And we really want to get into some key focus topics. And today's focus topic is going to be about race. So we met our presenters in our inaugural episode. Again, we're talking to our friends, Matt and Shanae from ODI, and we're going to continue this discussion on implicit bias and today focusing on race. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for having us again.
Yeah, good to be here.
It was a great episode that we had last time. And so now we want to talk with our fellow faculty members and people listening a little bit about race. And let's kind of get a broad overview if we can. How does race impact us as a society in general?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Well, I'll get us started, and then I look forward to where the conversation goes, knowing that this is such an important topic and so complex. So for starters, race is a social construct, as many of our social identities are. However, we can't just go away with the social construct, because this is now a way in which we have come to group ourselves and identify and be in community with one another. Because although race is a social construct, we do have shared lived experiences from those in our social groups. In particular, we're talking about race right now. And so thinking of that, you know, I am an individual, as I mentioned last time, who identifies as multiracial. And so I hate boxes, right? And I don't always have a box that really identifies me when I go to fill out any type of form. So every time that I do come across a box that says, check here if you're multiracial or check more than one box, I'm very excited. However, I consider myself a Black multiracial individual, given the social conditioning I've had and my upbringing in my Black community. Although I am very fond and I have great memories with my German grandmother and so on and so forth, I know that the world is going to see me, especially if I wear my hair naturally curly, as a Black woman. And so those experiences allow me to relate to the Black community. And I now have to identify that way due to these shared lived experiences that we have. Not only the bad ones, but also the good ones, thinking of our shared love of music and culture and our food and our language, our dialect. So race, in essence, has now become a way of life and culture.
I'm going to add to that too. So I'm a white male, and I recognize that my white maleness can often, you know, that's the first thing people see about me, right? Before they get to know anything about who I am or what I believe or what my lifestyle is or my experiences, they see white male, and we live in this white supremacy culture. And with that culture comes privilege. And I'm aware of that privilege. Just a sidebar. And this is kind of a silly situation, but regardless, it's still a little bit, I hope you have a dark sense of humor, but, I was at a restaurant one time with, some coworker friends, and they were people of color, and I was the only white person there. We were waiting and waiting for a long time, waiting to be seated. And it's like, gosh, where is the server? Like, what's happening? You know, it said, wait to be seated. And so one of my coworker friends said, Matt, can you use your white privilege and go talk to someone to get us a seat? And, you know, she said it, of course, within like tongue in cheek, but at the same time, you know, like it's it was interesting conversation to think about, you know, what her experience would have been like asking for a seat versus my experience, you know, depending upon where we were and who the other people were. And that is an unfortunate thought. And it, as funny as it is, it also makes me really sad to think that that's kind of just like a viewpoint that many people use to judge and understand the world. And maybe just the, you know, Dr. Corfield, you asked about this kind of like big picture, just to maybe kind of bring it down to specific detail. I was looking earlier in the, a couple weeks ago, I was looking this up. I just pulled this up again from Indian Health Services online. And there's a snippet that stood out to me. It said, so just one example of racial impact. The American Indian and Alaska Native people have long experienced lower health status when compared with other Americans. Lower life expectancy and the disproportionate disease burden exist perhaps because of inadequate education, disproportionate poverty, discrimination in the delivery of health services, and cultural differences. These are broad quality of life issues rooted in economic adversity and poor social conditions. So think about the way in which race impacts us. It can impact us in so many different ways and the intersections of our lives too. So it's just important for us to be mindful of that as we move through the world, knowing that we all have these things to face.
Yeah, that's really interesting. When we think about how we move through the world and how we kind of put forward race as a concept to other people, I also identify as a mixed race person. And my dad is Black and my mom is white. And even as a healthcare professional, you think that you are above seeing race as a construct and playing into the societal narrative that's been formulated for all of us. And it's just not true. I've told this to people in my department before that even though my family is from Jamaica and Black, when I take implicit bias tests, I still have implicit bias toward people of color because of this narrative that is consistently put forward by society. And it's interesting to kind of see that how that plays forward, especially in healthcare. Because we have a big job to do to overcome these biases, to get more diverse people in orthopedics as trainees, but also to provide the best level of care for everyone across all spectrums of life.
Yeah, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm going to put you on the spot for a second. But, you know, you mentioned you've recognized that sort of bias in yourself. When did you recognize that even as a healthcare professional, even as a person of mixed race, that you have that sort of bias, maybe toward others who are even maybe similar to you?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I did not recognize this until I was a grown adult, and I did not recognize this probably until I'd first started my graduate training. And because you're always drilled in conceptually about what you are and what that means to the rest of the world. And so it was a very long time before I figured this out. And lots of people are still thinking through this, especially if it's not your own personal lived experience. And it can be well into adulthood that you get it together and figure it out. Yes, no. What's your experience with this?
Yeah, kind of jumping into the conversation now that we've drilled it down to implicit bias in healthcare, you know, I think about the stereotypes, right, that we have been shown in a media, specifically thinking about the Black community. We typically think of Black men as strong individuals who do not suffer pain because of the old narratives we have, right, around Black men being brute, Black men being similar and resembling gorillas, being subhuman. And so when we think about those stereotypes and these images that we have, that is going to impact how we show up in the healthcare realm and how we build trust with our patients. Do we believe them when we say, hey, I'm in pain, I'm experiencing this? We saw this with the opioid crisis, right? It's impacted so many families, so many individuals, but due to other crises that we've seen, especially impacting communities of color, we now put certain folks in categories of like, oh, those are the substance users. Those are the ones who struggle with chemical health. And more times than not, we think of those individuals as individuals of color, as other marginalized communities. And so we, as a health professional, may be saying, you know, I don't know, someone from your community may not do well with this medication. You may become addicted more times than not. And although stereotypes do have a mist or a little bit of truth to them, we have to take into a context all of the factors that made that stereotype come to light, right? What were the historical implications? What were the lack of resources? What resources did communities have? So on and so forth. And so really what it boils down to is us trying to understand how our implicit biases are impacting our ability to see folks as human and to build trust with our patients.
Such a good example, Shanae. I love your, I just want to build off something really quickly and then go to you, Dr. Corfield, but you had such a good example of, you know, I was thinking about confirmation bias when you were saying that. So like if I were a person, say I'm in the hospital and I see like a young black man coming in with some sort of drug issue. And I already have that bias in my head that is something that exists in this world and that's commonplace. And I see it happening. It's confirming that, oh, all young black men have drug issues, drug abuse issues, or drug addiction issues, or whatever it might be. And whether or not it's actually true, I have that bias in my head already. And then I'm seeing it happening in front of me. And therefore, I believe that's true. And then I'm going to treat this person in that particular way because that bias is now being played out. And I'm not giving that person, I'm not giving anyone else, any other young black man, that chance to prove themselves otherwise because I've already confirmed it in my head. I'm not taking that moment to stop and pause and recognize this is something that I have racially biased. I have this racially biased thought that's now being played out, and it's harming how I give care to other people, how I see other people.
Yeah, thanks for that. That's really interesting. And how that continues to play and perpetuate this. What do you guys think, and what would you tell our people who are in selection committees? You know, I think our goal overall is to increase our diverse workforce. So the people who we're training look like the people who we're treating. What advice would you have for people going into residency interviews, maybe about looking at their own biases and how this interacts with how we see and interview people?
Well, I'll get us started and simply say we like people who are like us. That is affinity bias 101, right? We're more comfortable with folks who have the same interests as us, who look like us, who speak like us. And so when you come across that in a search and selection committee, please just recognize that. It's not good. It's not bad. But just know that you may be drawn towards folks who are similar to you. And then pay attention to how you interview folks or interact with candidates who are different. Are you criticizing them or rating them more harshly because there are different cultural differences that are being displayed? Does the individual have an accent? And is that impacting the way you think of the individual's intellect or their ability to communicate with patients and colleagues on staff? And so the more that you can slow down and just slow down your thinking and use as much objective facts as possible, you really can help to mitigate those biases. And then, of course, you know, doing things that allows you to gain awareness about your biases. So you can take implicit biases at the Project Implicit Race, or IAT for short. And so you can have some awareness of like, what are these things that I've come to know and these stereotypes that come up for me based on things that I've heard and saw in the media and around me? And how can I mitigate that? And so the more awareness you can gain, the more that you can slow down your thinking. And hopefully that leads to an unbiased hire in the candidacy process. Anything you'll add, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, amen to all that. bold, underline, italics, underscore, everything you just said. I think the more objectivity we have in any of that work, when it comes to hiring, is extremely important, because there are studies, and I'm sorry, I can't name them off the top of my head, but there are studies that have been shown that that there are candidates who have a more ethnic sounding name are less likely to be hired than someone who has a more generalized white sounding name. And to think that any of us might be infallible to that. Oh, I'm not racist, or I don't have that mentality. I'm not going to do that. We can already set ourselves up for failure. As woke as we might like to think or believe we are, we still are. We still are apt to making decisions and to having those biases that might lead us toward making a decision that is maybe not as objective as we'd like it to be, or maybe just falling into, as you mentioned, Shania, like an affinity bias, like, oh, I just really like how this person said this, or I really like how this person created their resume, or whatever it might be, or I like their word choices. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that they fit the criteria any more or less than anyone else. So we need to think objectively and need to really reflect on those pieces. Like you said, slowing down. I know we say that a lot, Shania, in the work that we do with our training it's slowing down, it's taking a moment to pause and looking inward and looking in the mirror rather than looking out the window. We need to do a lot of self-reflection to understand where we're coming from and how we present ourselves to the world too, because that can impact other people.
Those are great points. And we also know that applies in clinical settings as well. So if we try to tap down and continually say, I'm not going to be implicitly biased, I'm not going to be implicitly biased, I'm not going to be implicitly biased, it makes it worse. It's that laser focus and slowing your thinking that actually helps to temper your implicit bias and not just saying, it's not there. I'm not thinking about it. You guys, this was a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for your insight. And I hope that the listeners really get a lot out of this. We really appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Appreciate you. Thank you, Dr. Corfield.
Yes, thank you.
This has been a partnership between the University of Minnesota Medical School, Department of Orthopedic Surgery, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, and the Medical School Office of DEI. Thank you for listening.